This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the NVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. There's been a lot of news and controversy within the video game world, and joining me to sift through this is reviews and previews editor at EGM Now, Ray Carcello. Thanks so much for joining me, Ray.
Thanks for having me, Mason.
You know, before we get into meat and bones of games, there's a bunch of DLCs that came out. One of them is for Injustice 2. I wanted to talk about the Ninja Turtles. How is that going to work out? I mean, is all four going to be in there, or do you play four at one time?
So, yeah, you're going to play four as one time. And so what ends up happening is that you basically, the turtles will kind of like tag in and out. And each one will have their own moveset. It won't be a full moveset, like a full character, but they'll each have their own certain moves that only each one can do. So their combos won't be as extensive as any of the standalone characters. But I'm sure there'll be some special combos that can also probably be chained together by tagging different turtles in and out. But there will be all four turtles represent one character.
That's going to be crazy. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. Another DLC that kind of came out, but they showed trailer for was the Black Widow, Winter Soldier, and Venom. Did you get a chance to look at those yet?
Yeah, I took a look at them. I like Venom's design. I mean, obviously Venom is a classic MBC character, so I'm looking forward to seeing how he kind of handles and plays a bit. We knew these characters were coming. It was only a matter of time. Black Widow's nice and everything, but I think still fans are pretty disappointed that this is going to be basically the final roster, and then and there's still no X-Men, and there's none of those characters. And I was talking to somebody the other day that basically every Marvel game I played this year, there's just no more X-Men anymore.
Yeah, it's because nobody wants to give up the licensing for them, and they can't go anywhere now. But you're right. Where's the X-Men at? You can't have Marvel games without X-Men, but apparently they're going to try, right?
Yeah, they're going to keep on pushing it, at least until Disney supposedly acquires 21st Century Fox. But fingers crossed, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, real fast, when it comes to Black Widow, did you notice she kind of reminded you of Jill from MVC3? Or is that just me? Like,
yeah.
The moveset, she looks...
Yeah. It's very much, you can kind of, this MVC Infinite, you can see the copy and paste job for so many characters. And that's why I think this game overall was just really disappointing for a lot of folks. It feels like a rush job or a cash grab. Whether it was, you know, Capcom looking for a payday from Disney, or Disney just trying to promote their movie universe more, I can't say about that, but this definitely feels just like a lot of copy and paste job. Most of the game felt like a copy and paste job, and now the fact that even the DLC characters feel copy and paste is just really disappointing.
Yeah, when I saw Winter Soldier, I was kind of like, oh, it's Winter Soldier, and I was like, is that Spencer? Is this Chris? Is this Redfield? Like, what's going on? He even has a little
blending
bit of
the two, yeah. And then again, another different face, and just, oh, goodness.
But so. I heard they're also rebalancing the game. Did you hear about that too, or no?
Yes, the rebalancing effort, it will be happening relatively soon, I believe. It was announced a couple weeks ago that, speaking of Chris is getting a lot of buffs, he'll be doing a lot more damage with his guns and his special abilities, and it's also basically, as some folks in the community have already nicknamed it, the Dante Must Die patch, that basically Dante is getting completely nerfed. His health is getting cut. Most of his combos are being nerfed. A lot of the damage that he deals with his specials is being knocked down. And also Dormammu's combos are going to be harder to string together and not continue for as long as they used to. So Dante and Dormammu are getting seriously nerfed in this rebalancing, and Chris is getting a big buff.
Yeah, Dormammu, I think, really needed that nerf. He was way too OP. That's just me.
No, I completely agree. With his ranged move, it was so easy to combo them and string them together that you could just kind of keep bouncing people for almost seemed like forever, especially if you had the reality gem, which is also getting nerfed somewhat finally. So at least it seems that at least the competitive aspects of Capcom's dev team are trying to make this as, at least as solid a title as possible, and definitely listening to the fans. And, you know, as happens with a lot of fighting games, you don't really understand how broken your game might be until it gets into the public's hands, and Capcom is definitely seeing that with MVC Infinite.
Isn't that the truth? Everybody loves grabbing a game and saying, this is what I can do.
Yeah.
Speaking of games that you could see what you can do, Call of Duty World War II was released in November. What'd you think of the game?
So, I really enjoyed it, actually. I'm not going to lie. I thought the campaign was, it was the kind of, you know, personal story that I think Call of Duty really needed. I think really grounding the stakes and the characters and kind of giving you that squad mentality. Sure, we've seen it before in other media, from Saving Private Ryan to a half dozen other war games, even in the Call of Duty series. But I think getting back to their roots like this, really showing off some of the, the power of the Xbox One X and whatnot, or a PS4 Pro with the graphics. And I think really trying to push the series forward by kind of taking a step back. It might be a year too late, but I thought the campaign was actually a lot of fun and really, really interesting, and definitely the most I've enjoyed a Call of Duty campaign, I think, in a few years.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, when it comes to Call of Duty, a few years ago, they've always was about the multiplayer. I'm kind of happy to see that they really put some work into the campaign, because I love doing things solo. I don't want to sit there and multiplay the entire time with other people, only because I get sick of people.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, and obviously multiplayer is still a huge part of this. I mean, Call of Duty did not forget about that either. They took examples from other shooters out there. They have this new mode called War, which is basically very, it's kind of objective-driven, where you have to accomplish three or four objectives per map, and you have to kind of keep pushing. And they also added the headquarters mode, which is kind of more of a new social feature for you and your friends to kind of group up beforehand and kind of check your stats and compare things. I will say the multiplayer, the maps are really small, it feels like. And I get that that's probably a result of them trying to keep the game feeling fast-paced and not having double jumps and rocket boosts and wall running anymore. You kind of can't have these long corridors. They don't want these long corridors to promote camping anymore. But the maps, I would say, feel very, very small for a Call of Duty multiplayer, which I think might be the only real knock against this multiplayer this year. But yeah, overall, I think this was a really great Call of Duty. Definitely a lot better than last year.
You know, why did they go back to World War II? I mean, I kind of always liked those history first-person shooters when they do Vietnam, you know, the Korea, and, you know, obviously World War I and II. But they went into the future. Now they're doing the World War II again. Like, it's been done. I mean, why would they do it again?
I think they were feeling a lot of pressure after what happened with Battlefield 1 last year, and just the absolute outpouring of positivity for EA, which is such a rarity. I think that it really has to do, just really has to do with the fact that people did not respond well to the future stuff, that they kind of felt it was all over the place. They couldn't really relate to the characters at all. And you kind of didn't know what to expect. You know, with a lot of these World War II weapons or Vietnam-era weapons or even Modern Warfare, people kind of have an idea of what they're getting into. You start adding laser cannons and wall running and, you know, EMP mines and all this other crazy stuff. And I think it starts to really grind on people. And it stops becoming this gritty first-person shooter that people want. And it ends up becoming another sci-fi adventure, which is all well and good, but that's not what people want from Call of Duty.
Yeah, that's a good point, because that is true. I mean, nobody wants to pick up a first-person shooter and they find out that it's all this sci-fi fantasy stuff, and they're like, "What just happened?"
Yeah, exactly. I think that people want, you know, sometimes, I mean, that's why war movies do so well. That's why we're still 70 years later romanticizing what happened with World War II, when it was the good guys won and the bad guys lost. And, you know, I think there's still, as horrible a time period as that was, and how much our grandfathers and grandmothers or great-grandfathers and great-grandmothers suffered during that period, and obviously how horrible a time it was, especially if you were in Europe. I think that still there's that Rota Mantis, is, like I said, because good guys won and bad guys lost in a world that doesn't always happen anymore. It's still very easy to romanticize, and I think people can still really get behind that and just sink their teeth into that. And I think that it's a lot easier to relate and to sell to people than just another sci-fi shooter.
Speaking of sci-fi shooters, and I happen to love this game, Bungie's Destiny. They were kind of caught XP throttling. Could you explain to people what that is?
So basically, Bungie had put in a system where kind of they increased the grind, where it would say you were getting so much XP for beating enemies or completing events or anything else in the game. You get a lot of XP for doing a lot of stuff in the game. It would say you're getting one thing, but in reality, you were only getting maybe 60% or so of that XP, because what they were trying to do was to keep people from grinding for levels to get the best gear, to get the best engrams, to get the best stuff in-game that you get when you level up. They thought it was a competitive... I mean, at least this is what they say. I think it's a lot of BS. They say it was for a competitive advantage, or for people to help keep the game competitive, so that people who may not have had the time to devote to Destiny 2 wouldn't be left behind from people who can obviously just kind of grind and put as much time as possible into it. I think it was really just another ploy to try and get people to try and sink money into microtransactions, which of course is such a hot button topic right now. But I really think that's what it was. That is what XP throttling is. It's basically saying you're getting one number, saying you're getting 1,000 XP, but you're really only getting 600. Yeah. You know, so I think that was when people found that out and they realized that's what was happening. You can imagine the uproar that followed.
Yeah, that's actually why I stopped playing Destiny, was because I didn't know it was the throttling, but I knew my XP wasn't doing too well. I got stuck. I think it was at like 268 or something. My gear was. And I was like, I couldn't break it. I couldn't go past. And I was like, I refuse to give them money.
that's what they're hoping for, though, is that people are either going to quit the game, or they're hoping that most people will obviously put forward the money to try and get the microtransactions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I knew that's kind of what it was, but I was like, I have $20. Should I do it? And I said no. I was strong. I just ended up stopping.
I'm proud of you, Mason.
Thank
Be
you so
strong.
Much.
Don't give in to the microtransactions.
No, I gave that money to League of Legends instead.
Oh, no. Oh, so close, Mason. So close.
I know. I got a skin. I got a new skin, so it's all good. I look incredible, kicking ass in top lane.
Oh, gosh.
I know. I'm horrible.
You're not horrible.
I get suckered. Somebody's getting my money. That's what ends up happening. And speaking of somebody getting your money, one of them is not going to be Star Wars Battlefield 2. Why is that a big deal when it comes to loot crates? I mean, there's some, like myself, sometimes I'll pay some money into it, and now people are up in arms. I kind of don't understand why.
Well, I think this time, and really the most recent iterations of EA's biggest games this year have really kind of leaned into this, whether it was Madden or Need for Speed or with Star Wars Battlefront 2, is that where it's, they're not even hiding the fact that this loot, their loot crate system, their system in particular, is basically a form of gambling. It's basically playing the slot machine, where they'll argue that, you always get something, but the problem is that something may not necessarily be worth what the money you put in is. You know, and you're basically putting your dollars, your hard-earned money, into something to try and get items that, and it's not just cosmetic items, because Overwatch does that too. But I think what really got people up in arms over this is that it's competitive items. It's items that can make your character better in multiplayer. And I think that, like, I played Battlefront over the past over Thanksgiving weekend to try and see what was going on. And you do get, like, a fair amount of money quickly early on, but then you have a choice with the in-game currency. Do you spend it on the hero characters like Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker or the new heroine of the campaign, Iden Versio? Or do you put it into these loot boxes for the chance to get items, better guns, better armor, better specials, like thermal detonators and things like that, to then potentially earn more money in multiplayer in games, even though there's a limit to how much you can make per matches per day. So it's kind of one of those things where people got really, really mad because it was basically if you put real-world money into the game, at least early on, you were going to have a legit competitive edge. And I know from playing over Thanksgiving weekend, there were a ton of people who had put impossible amounts of – they had to have spent money to have their characters at the levels that they had them at. Because I put almost 20 hours in over the weekend, and I didn't have a multiplayer character past level 4. And these were had characters at level 26, level 27, based on their gear and their upgrades and everything else that they had bought for them. And it was such an unfair fight that, of course, they were near the top of the leaderboards in every match because it might take 5 or 6 blaster bolts to kill them, where it would only take 2 or 3 to kill me because I don't have the special armor, because I don't have the special guns, because I don't have the other stuff, because I'm grinding for it like a lot of other people. And when you start making it where it's pay to win, where you pay money, not only are you paying money to get the better stuff, but you're basically gambling to get the better stuff. This was just the perfect storm of EA's greed just coming through full front and full center.
You see, I don't know. I don't know about that. If that was really greed or if people are just whining. And don't get mad at me just yet. I was just thinking, you know, when it comes to buying microtransactions like that, when it comes to like, hey, pay to play or pay to win, I think of like cell phone games. Clash of Clans does that. You could sit there and put real money into the game and you can max out your town hall and be the biggest and baddest one there. And you can just go up the leaderboard that way using money. That's how the YouTube clashers get so high, is that they end up getting using the money from the advertisements from their video. And they go and they just use that to upgrade their town hall. That's kind of just the way it's been around for, and not just Clash of Clans. There's other cell phone mobile games that do that too. And then you also have to think of like when it comes to like low drop rates, I think of World of Warcraft, Aeon, like, you know, EverQuest, all these games, they have low drop rates. I mean, you're not supposed to pay, but you do grind for it. When I was playing World of Warcraft, I mean, I spent hours and hours playing every day, got to one of the top 500 guilds in the world. And I mean, I kind of earned that, but that was because I played for hours, maybe more than 12 hours a day. I mean, if you're willing to put the time and money into it, and it's been happening for years and years and years, why is it a big deal now? Or is it because it's Star Wars?
Well, I definitely think it's partially because it's Star Wars. I'm not going to lie there. That this such a big brand, I think. Because, I mean, as big as Clash of Clans is, as big as World of Warcraft is, they pale in comparison, in my opinion, to Star Wars. And I think because of that, Star Wars is reaching an audience that never really dealt with a lot of this stuff, or at least is not used to dealing with a lot of this stuff. And I think that's why there's such an uproar. And I think there's a lot of people now starting to realize just how pervasive these game mechanics are and how bad they are potentially for the game industry, because I really think that there's going to be some legit blowback. I mean, there already is, but there's going to be even more legit blowback as a result of this. And I think games are heading to EA has to be very, very careful how they handle this going forward, because they could be we could be in the precipice of something that could change the game industry forever.
Yeah.
And depending on if the government starts stepping in and or potentially lobbyist groups or many different sides to this. We could get to a point where this stuff gets being regulated, and then games like Clash of Clans or games that have these that thrive on these microtransactions might end up going away.
Yeah,
because they might not be able to hit, you know, depending on what happens with all these legislation, whatever potential legislation. So I really think that the game industry has to be very, very careful how they handle this going forward. And I think that's because that's the thing, right? Like, for a lot of people who just wanted to get in and just play Star Wars, it wasn't fun for them, because they weren't willing to put in that money and some people were willing to grind, you know what I mean? But I think that if grinding is part of your game mechanics, that's part of your game mechanics, that's fine. But I think that it was just that so many people were so infuriated by, I mean, to get the best characters in the game. I mean, there was people who put hundreds of hours already into the game or hundreds of dollars into the game and still couldn't get Darth Vader, still couldn't get Luke Skywalker. And what ended up happening is that these people kind of realize that this is just, especially with EA, like, it's not like you're putting a dollar in and you're getting $100 back for, guaranteed currency or whatever, right? I mean, you did have that like an ultra premium currency, the crystals or whatever, but like you needed to, if you wanted to do things through the loot boxes, it basically became a form of gambling because sometimes the loot boxes would give you credits, sometimes they would give you gear. I mean, it wasn't the best way to do things, but you know, at what point does, you know, I mean, and this is what people are bringing up in government now, is at what point is it to these companies' responsibility to not take advantage of people, of preying on people who might be susceptible to these kinds of gimmicks and mechanics, where you have people like with Mass Effect, where there was the guy who spent, I mean, I've talked about this example 100 times because it still blows my mind, who spent $15,000 on Mass Effect Andromeda. I mean, at what point are you taking advantage of this individual who may have an issue or a problem, and at what point is it the company's responsibility? So I think that, and I think that's what this is really unfortunately shown a light on now, for the an ugly light on the gaming industry, which was the last thing the gaming industry needed right now. And I think that it could, like I said, EA and other companies who use microtransactions as a primary form of income need to be very, very careful how they handle this going forward.
Oh, absolutely. I think people have been talking about how they don't like DLCs and microtransactions because it feels like you're paying for a game that's only 30% done or 30% available. And it's unfortunate because, I can see it from the developer's point of view. They make this game, they're out money. So how can we recoup on our money besides just $59.99? Oh, I know, we can split it up a little bit and make $20 off of some small little DLC. And I get it, I understand. But if you can't afford to make that game, that big blockbuster type game, maybe just slow down on the graphics, up the storyline, and maybe make a good game that can sell better than trying to sell it in pieces.
Well, I completely agree with you, and I think, but that part of this is also that companies like Activision and EA and others have Warner Brothers, Ubisoft, you name it. They've basically grown so big so quickly. It almost feels like the banks and the financial crisis from a decade ago, where these companies feel they're almost too big to fail. And they now overextended their money, and they've overextended their economics so much throughout their companies and their subsidiaries that now they need to keep the money flow coming in because they've extended themselves too far. They're stretched too thin. And so that's why you have now annual games, you have Activision, they're just cranking out Call of Duty every year when really everybody's basically said, we have franchise fatigue. Please do us a favor, take a year off. You know, I mean, even EA, like with all their sports games, like, I mean, as these teams grow in size, as these teams go from 50 people to 100 people to 200 people, these are people's salaries and medical benefits and other benefits that you have to pay for. And that comes from a company's, bottom line. And they need to find a way to recoup those losses. But at what point, you know, like I said, these companies, I think, have gotten to a point now where these biggest companies, anyways, have overextended themselves. And are now basically relying on microtransactions in the hopes of mitigating their losses that they're basically, and some of them are just speeding by. I mean, I remember when Square Enix had the new Tomb Raider reboot came out, and it sold 4 million units. 4 million units used to be an amazing amount of games. And Square Enix was like, we broke even.
Wow.
What? There's something wrong with your business model if you sold 4 million units and you're only breaking even.
That
you
is
know,
true.
I'm sorry.
No, you're right. That is so true. I mean, 4 million units and they broke even? This is like what happened with Injustice. They made 96 million on their first weekend and they're like, it wasn't good enough.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, at what point have we gotten to where all these studios, whether it's movies in Hollywood or games in the gaming industry, or whatever, where you're making all this money hand over fist, and it's not enough. And the thing is that the consumer base is not growing fast enough to support the growth of these companies. There aren't more people, and especially with, I mean, I'm not going to get into politics, I'm not going to get into the economy and how trickle down does not work whatsoever. But there's more, even if there are more people, there's less money to go around. There's less money for people to spend on their day-to-day lives and on their luxuries. So I mean, it's it really makes you wonder what's going to happen to the gaming industry. And I've been saying this for a while, and people kind of just say, oh, there's crazy Ray Carcillo saying the sky is falling. And I'm like, I think we're getting close to, if we're not careful, that the bubble is going to burst soon for the video game industry. And when we're seeing EA close studios like Visceral, and we're seeing Activision board up places like Neversoft a couple years ago, and the whole publishers like THQ 6 years ago completely going under, I wouldn't be surprised if we started to see more of this more rapidly as the money dries up. Because if the fan base isn't going to support this with microtransactions, then the gaming industry has to grow up and understand they needed to do something they've been trying not to do, which is raise the bottom line cost of video games from $60 to probably $70 or even $80, much like the movie industry for years has been upping the price of movie tickets to the point where it costs $20 a person to go to a movie if you're here in L.A. like me. But people still pay it. And the thing is that, and then if you do that, then maybe cut back on the microtransactions. I think more people would pay $70 a video game for no microtransactions and no DLC than would $60, and then you have your 10 to 20% of the public ended up paying the extra $60 and paying an extra $20 for the DLC later on, or the season pass. But whatever the video game industry does, it has to be careful, and it has to be soon, because I really do think we're getting close to a point where a bubble is going to burst, and you're going to start seeing stuff like Visceral being closed down. You're going to start seeing stuff like that happen a lot more often, especially from the biggest publishers, Activision, EA, Ubisoft, Warner Brothers, if they're not careful, and because I really do believe they've stressed themselves far too thin.
You know, I agree with you, but I think the bubble, I think it already popped. Only reason I say that is because there's a reason why indie games like Cuphead have done so well, is because people are sick of the big developers. Nobody wants to mess with them anymore. And also another reason is the retro game market. You're saying $70 to $80 for a game that's complete. I can get about 4 or 5 games completed already, NES cartridge. And they have a better story, too.
No, I mean, that's completely true. I mean, that's why Nintendo's making Hand Over Fist, because of the SNES Classic and the NES Classic. You know, I mean, that's why they're bringing them back. I mean, it's cheaper if you get more bang for your buck. I will say the one thing that people forget, Cuphead is a great example, and Cuphead was an amazing game. Right now it's definitely top 3 for me, game of the year. Might even be game of the year, not sure yet. But, you know, those guys had to mortgage their homes.
Yeah.
You know, they had to basically give up almost everything for this to finish this game, and it took them a very, very long time. So not every indie game ends with the happy ending that they ended up recouping everything, they ended up being a huge success, and everybody loves them now. And also, they ended up, Microsoft ended up giving them some backing to kind of help them get to the finish line. Not every indie game has that happy ending. It's expensive to make video games if this is your primary career and you don't work for a major publisher. So, I just a word of warning there when it comes to definitely support indie games, but also understand that there's for every Cuphead, there's probably 2 or 3 games that crash and burn and that people end up losing their livelihoods over.
Well, that's the cost of business. It's a high risk is a high value, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. You gotta be in it to win it, and you gotta be willing to, nothing ventured, nothing gained. So you gotta definitely put yourself on the line a little. But it's definitely something you gotta be. I think people need to be wary of, because I know a lot of guys who they split off. A lot of developers split off from these major publishers or developers, and they feel like, oh, well, we've got these amazing games to our credits, and we worked on this and we worked on that, and then they make an indie game and it doesn't sell because, yeah, you worked on these amazing AAA games, but you were a team of 500 people. Now you're a team of 5. And you're also in an extremely, extremely saturated market, because with tools like Unreal Engine 4 and with CryEngine and with all these other great Unity and Unity and all these other great game-making tools now being readily available for a monthly $19.99 subscription or the likes, anybody can make a game. So this market is even more saturated than ever. And you need to be careful that, even though you may have the pedigree, you're going against literally a thousand games released a year. And so it's really hard to get people's eyeballs on that. So even though you may have the pedigree, you may not have the following that you think you do. And that can also lead you to an absolute financial disaster.
You know, that reminded me when I was growing up, I wanted to go into graphic design and I didn't. But one of my friends, she went into graphic design and she's like, you know, it really sucks being a graphic designer right now because making websites, you're now going up against 13-year-olds who can make websites just as good as you.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, it's the same thing even in journalism. It's the same thing whether you're in games or anything else. You're going against the person on Twitter who happens to be at the scene of the crime with their phone open, or in terms of games, you're going against YouTubers. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
They may not have journalistic integrity. They may not have the, you know, and they obviously, you know, a lot of them take money under the table that they never disclose. But, you know, but those, you know, that's who we're competing with now. Like, even, like, as great as technology has been, it's also really been pushing out a lot of traditional mediums and a lot of different ways that people used to make a living. So as a world, we are transitioning in it's a brave new world. Whether that's a good world or a bad world, we're going to have to see, because transition is always a tumultuous time.
Yeah, it's the truth, man. You know, when it comes to VR, do you think that's like an area that when it comes to game developers and publishers, that's something they could sit there and say, hey, we want to put a $70 or $80 tag on those games? Do you think that would work?
I think we're going to get to that point. I think that what you have to do with VR, though, is you have to actually make games and not gimmicks. I think what's happening a lot with a lot of VR games right now is that people are still trying to figure out what the technology is, and they were trying to get in on board, trying to get everybody on board early. And to do that, you've had basically people just still experimenting. Until you get more experiences like Resident Evil 7 or Doom or Skyrim, and you have these complete games on VR, I don't think VR will take off. When that happens, though, then I think you'll see VR really start to take off, and then you can start charging $60, $70, $80 for VR games.
I played the Skyrim one for PlayStation VR, and it was actually a lot of fun. I spooked myself a couple times because I kept touching around at things, and I was like, what's that? Like, I'm like an idiot, but it happened.
Hey, it happens to the best of us. Happens
I know,
to the best.
You know what? You play for a couple hours, you kind of forget where you're at. And but when it comes to the VR, I really thought that, you know, this is a place where maybe we're going to go next. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I'm looking more forward to augmented reality like Pokemon Go was coming to my console. I don't know how that would work, but I think that would be more fun, personally.
Yeah, I mean, it'll definitely be interesting. It'll definitely be something to, I think it'll be something to see. I mean, I think it'll definitely happen. It's just, I don't know. I don't know when it'll happen, but I mean, as long as there's a chance for people to make money, I think there's always going to be somebody who's going to be willing to explore that avenue.
That's a good way to put it, Ray. Well, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find you at?
I'm on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Just look for me at Ray Carcillo. And obviously, for all my reviews, previews, and news, go to egmnow.com. And get ready to stay tuned for some great Game of the Year stuff. We're going to have some good stuff coming up in the next few weeks. So it's a good time. It's the end of the year. Best time to be in games.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.